Fan Thoughts with Will and Clint, Fridays at 6. Presented by Breckenridge Brewery.
Welcome back, listeners. And Breckenridge Brewery, thank you always for supporting the show. Happy hour on a Friday. Before we pick up this interview with Corey Sullivan, or Sully, as I like to call him, let's give you some local sports team score updates. Currently, the Nuggets are playing the Mavericks. First quarter, 2 minutes to go. They are down by 2 points, but well and truly in this game. Avalanche tied at 1 apiece. Now, Sully, we were talking about game one, that first experience signing the Green Monster. Game one, game two, talk me through how that was as a non-starter.
It was a beating.
I think that's the best way to describe it.
Well, actually, you know what? Before you jump into that specifically, talk about the fact that when you did reference the fact that you go through that run and you win 21 out of 22 and you get to the point where you travel to Boston for game one, and what happens to the momentum? And not only going into game one, but then maybe after losing game one, and we all know what happened, you know, you'll get into it, but, you know, where is the team's head? And, you know, talk, you know, kind of back to momentum.
So now I've had, obviously, 10, 11, 12 years, we've had an opportunity to be reflective on how that all went. And as the fans who are riding in their cars, hopefully safely driving in the snow, remember, we were a team built on that momentum. You know, that was what we had going for us. And when you get to the playoffs and you sweep Philly and you sweep Arizona, and then you're waiting, and then you're waiting, and then you're waiting. We had 8 days off.
Really?
8 days off. It's still the longest stretch between any series in any sport, I believe. It was all gone. Now, if you had asked any one of us during those 8 games, we were ready. We were, you know, we were inter-squad, doing everything we could.
Yeah.
But there's something to the game speed and playing in that scenario where we just got smoked.
Well, when you talk about like preparation.
Yeah.
So what happens in those 8 days or those, you know, those, do you try your, you know, your darndest to make sure you're doing the exact same things pregame?
That's exactly what we did. You know, I mean, we went out, we would do everything the exact same. We'd have inter-squad games so that our pitchers would throw, and whether it was Fogg or Francis, they would mess around and throw at guys, and we had fun with it.
You know, wore the same socks.
That was the kind of guys we were. But again, all the momentum was sucked out of the building with those 8 days off, and we didn't understand it at the time. We were ready to go. Everybody was, you know, I would say as prepared as we could be, but come that game one, when that first inning clicked, it was, we were swimming uphill.
You were toddlers.
Yeah, we were the toddlers again. Yeah. That's honestly how that, and that the game did not go well the first game as
weather
we
was
know.
Bad. Weather was rainy. It was misty. Francis
it was
didn't
in our
feel
eyes.
Great. Yeah.
No, I mean, Francis, I actually was with him about two and a half weeks ago, and he said to the day, he wanted to show his kids, this is what I did. He still never watched that game.
Yeah,
really? He has never watched that game. Hmm. Can't do it. I mean, it was not an entertaining Major League Baseball game. And for all of us to have the opportunity to play in a World Series, and I don't want to say we weren't prepared, because we were.
Sure.
But, I mean,
you went on a roll.
This town was electric.
Oh, well,
during that.
And I think that, didn't they score three in the first?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you want to talk about landing a haymaker. It was, we were like, oh God, no.
Yeah.
And I think the final score was 11-1. I don't look back at it.
13, by the way.
That might
be a little deflating.
It really, really was. And again, we didn't think anything of it. We're like, okay, we'll get them next game. We're good.
Yeah. Next one.
And kind of the same scenario, but then we're coming home.
Yeah, right.
And
now,
coming
now, game
home.
Game three, you're playing a different role.
Yeah, I was. I had an opportunity to start in center field that day. Daisuke Matsuzaka was on the mound, and, you know, I got called into the office by Clint, told I'm going to start. I'm going to have an opportunity to go out there.
What's that like? What's that like for someone like you that went out there and signed the Green Monster, and to get that, you know, from your manager to you know, in game three, this is the World Series. What, you know, talk about that moment.
In that moment, it was no different. Honestly, it was the same idea of that month of September and how hot we were. It was okay. Mm. I'm starting in center field. My job is to, you know, control the outfield, make sure everybody's in position, and have quality at bats. That was really the way I looked at it. It wasn't, oh my God, I'm playing
right
in a World Series game. Now, I honestly never even thought about it. And I can remember Mike Lowell flew out to me to end the first inning, and I almost overran the ball. And I was like, oh my God, what blade of grass am I going to hide behind if I miss a fly ball in a World Series game?
Oh.
I can tell you I've never been nervous at the plate in my life. The two times I've ever been nervous on a baseball field were the first defensive inning I played when I went in on a double switch for Matt Holliday in that first game and that first inning in the World Series. And it's really just because you know you can't hide.
Yeah.
You're supposed to get out at the plate half the time, really more than half the time.
Sure.
But out there, you make a mistake,
it's all
you're
on you.
All alone.
It's
and
all
you,
on you.
Now that I've been on the broadcast side too, I know that that camera stays on me.
You know,
I know it does.
Off air.
And I know they're, on air.
No.
And I know they're talking about it.
Well, what I was going to say is that off air, we're still talking about the Bill Buckner play.
Yeah.
We're still talking about the Bill Buckner play. I'm a Red Sox fan, so you know the correlation's 0-7. But the series didn't go the way you just wanted it.
It did not.
What was the energy like coming into the next season?
I can remember before we even got to spring training. So, you know, baseball players are creatures of habit, much like every other sport. The season ended. Everybody always took the month of October off. When we didn't make the playoffs, October was just go home, be with your family, travel, go on vacation. Come November, you start working out. You know, you may start hitting in the cage, but you're lifting. You're ready to get your body back into shape to get going again. The season ended 2 days later. I went into Coors Field to go start working out. There were 9 of us. And I was like, okay.
Wow. All right.
I think everybody else is on the same boat, because not a lot of people lived in the city, like in Denver. You know, you'd go to where you were from or go south where it was warmer. The toddlers, as we all lived here.
Yep.
And we were all there. Nobody had even talked to each other, I don't think. We just kind of went our own ways, and we all showed up that Monday, and we were all there at 10 a.m. ready to go, and it was pretty cool. Obviously, 08 didn't go the same way, and after that, a few guys got traded away. Some pieces were moved. I actually ended up going to the New York Mets after that, and for the Rockies, 2009, they made the playoffs again, and that's looking back, is that window, 7, 8, 9, it could have been.
Could have been something. Yeah.
Well, in 2008, like you said, it didn't transpire the way that, you know, especially with the start of that season where everybody's like, okay, we got so close.
Yeah.
And that momentum wasn't there anymore, was it? And you know, certainly in 08, I'm trying to think, that was the year, were you down?
I think that year only had 28 at-bats at the major league level. I spent a lot of the time in AAA.
In AAA, yeah.
But either way, again, this is one of those things. Is that year in 07, Spilly and I started the year in AAA. Both of us.
Right.
But we always felt like we were part of the team. That was that group of guys. That's the way it worked. And, you know, 08 was the punch in the gut to all of us. It wasn't the World Series. It was the expectation of, okay, we've tasted it now. We want it bad. And unfortunately, we didn't get there. But that's what makes what this current team's doing so special to me, is the opportunity to go back-to-back years. They're the first Rockies team to do it. And I'll be honest, I think they'll do it 3 years in a row.
Really? Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So this year's team, I think arguably people think that they didn't make a whole lot of moves, which indicates either A, that they think they're that close, or they don't have the money. And they don't, you know, a lot of the criticism is they're not going to spend the money. Now, certainly there's a couple free agents out there, but not a huge free agent class and not a huge opportunity for any of the teams to make big moves. So this year's team, what do you think about the moves they've made and moving forward into, you know, we're in spring training right now. How do you see the team shaping up? And obviously you've been a pretty good How do you say that?
Prognosticator. I was what I was hoping you were trying to say. That means I was good at guessing.
You almost read my mind.
That was the idea.
Yeah. So, you've been really good the last 3 years.
Well, thank you. That means the first two I wasn't very good.
Well, but 90, 91
yeah, I said, wins. Yeah, I was pretty close in the last couple of years. They came up a game short, obviously, of winning the division. To me, when fans ask, you know, why didn't they do this or why didn't they do that? When you look at the team last year, you were one game away from winning the division, the first division title in the Rockies' history.
Yeah.
And you could go through the 163-game regular season. It's weird to say that. It was 163 games because they got an extra one.
Yep.
And find a game that got away from them.
Right.
And if they win that game, well, great. Hindsight's 20/20. To me, the team was good enough to win a division title. And when you look at whether it was a free agent starting pitcher or, you know, a bullpen piece that fans want, everybody wants you to bring in the guy.
Sure.
The guy. Bring in Manny Machado. Bring in Bryce Harper. Bring in Craig Kimbrell. Bring in Dallas Keuchel. Bring them all. You also have to remember the effect it'll have on the clubhouse. And when we're talking about a group of guys for the last 2 years that have done what they've done and basically played meaningful games the entire season, because the year before they made the playoffs by one game.
Yeah.
And then last year they had to play an extra game to find out if they win the division.
Right.
Bringing guys in that are ancillary to that, they have to fit in. More importantly, when you look at the starting rotation last year, they did an incredible job. You've got the same group back.
Right.
Why do you need to add anything? Right.
Sure. So
the bullpen, if anything, underachieved. And those are the guys that you're expecting to do better.
We're going to come back and talk all things coming up with the Rockies.
The Good Child, Will Evans, Fan Thoughts, Fridays 6 to 8, presented by Breckenridge Brewery.
I got to tell you guys, the snow is really starting to come down out here. Looking out on Lincoln Street, be safe out there if you're driving. Some local sports updates. Nuggets tied. 8 minutes left in the second, 37 apiece against the Mavericks in Dallas. And unless anything's changed, Chicago versus the Avalanche, tied at 2 apiece, end of the second. We're going to pick this up with Corey and my man, Jamie Mack. I'm going to hand it over to you guys, because baseball isn't my strength. I have opinions, but I have no knowledge.
Well,
that's kind of us, too.
I was going to say, isn't that our daily life?
But, yeah. How do you feel? You just said that you think the Rockies are going to make the playoffs 3 years in a row. Tell me why.
I think they've got an incredible foundation, a great core group of guys, and I think the culture that Bud Black and Jeff Breidich and his front office have created over there is a winning culture. And to be honest with you, I've never experienced making the playoffs 2 years in a row, but I can tell you I want it. And if I want it and the fans want it, I can only imagine what the guys in the clubhouse feel, because the first year they got one game.
Mm-hmm.
Last year they got a series.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to want more than that. And you have to continue to, I mean, I watch these guys now and we were talking about technology. My goodness, the game has changed from when I was there.
Right.
I mean, these guys are machines.
Mm.
They are all there early for spring training. I mean, the report date back when I played was the day you showed up. These guys, I don't even know if they find out when the report date is, because they're just there.
They're working.
And they are nonstop working. And, you know, we were talking about the pitching staff. The starting staff is great. The bullpen, I think they did it adequate, but that's the area where there were some guys that underachieved that have traditionally been really, really good. And if they come back to form, this team, we talk about that one game, I mean, one game can be found anywhere.
Yeah.
So additions, subtractions, those don't necessarily matter.
So the additions and or subtractions of moving people around and the movement of Desmond to center, talk about those movements as far as bringing Murphy in and what that does to defensively, specifically, to that dynamic.
Well, I had the opportunity to play with Daniel Murphy in 2009 with the Mets. It was his rookie season. They were trying to find a place for him on the field. That team had a lot of talent. They tried him out in left field. First series in Miami didn't go very well. Daniel admittedly would tell you that. Played him at second base. He's got good hands, good feet, able to turn the double play, and that, and everything was fine at second base. I think first base, he's a phenomenal first baseman. He understands how to do it. More importantly, when he gets in the box at Coors Field, 81 games.
Licking his chops.
Oh, my goodness.
Licking his chops.
I say this. I don't know if I've ever said this about anyone, really. He might be the best hitter I've seen at such a young age. When I saw him his rookie year, he absorbed more knowledge from guys. I wish I had approached hitting that way. It's incredible the way he approached it then. And I'm sure, I mean, I saw him last week when he was down there and we talked a little bit,
yeah.
But it was nonstop. It was amazing to just listen to the conversations. The kid was, I think, 24, 25 at the time.
Right.
And he knew more about hitting than I could have ever dreamt and understood
it. At that point, who was he learning from?
I mean, there were guys like Howard Johnson, David Wright, Carlos Delgado, Carlos Beltran. And I mean, he had their ear at all times. And it made me think, why didn't I talk to Todd more? Maybe I wouldn't be a broadcaster now, right? Maybe if I had just talked to Matt and Tulo just a little bit more.
Right.
And no, I mean, Daniel, I think he's got an opportunity at 50 doubles very, very easily at Coors Field. I joked with him, he can turn a triple into a double like Garrett Atkins could.
Right,
He could have an opportunity at that. The guy is one of the best I've ever seen at understanding how to make contact. I watched him take batting practice last week, and he did the same thing he did in 09, which is he can tell you where the ball was on the plate every single pitch, and he'll ask. He'll say, was that far off?
Yeah.
Was that... He was taking BP, and he comes out of the cage talking to Charlie Blackman, and they're talking about the ball that was about half a ball off the inner part of the plate. Mm-hmm. And he goes, yeah, I haven't been able to get to that since I had knee surgery.
Really?
I was like, oh, my God. Now I get it. Now I get why I'm here and he's there.
Well, so that being said, you know, he's obviously focused on his hitting.
Yes.
So moving Charlie over to right, and, you know, like I said, defensively, do you think that really makes a ton of difference with Desmond moving over into center and Charlie being in right? And I'm sure you've talked to Charlie at some point over the last few weeks. I'm assuming he is fine with that transition and he's all about winning. In your opinion, defensively, does that make us better?
I think whether it's him, whether it's Charlie, Desmond, or David Dahl in center field, they're all three very capable athletes. They're all three incredibly hard workers. I think for Charlie, the most important thing is protecting his legs. I think when we look at his season 2 years ago and what he was able to accomplish, something no one had ever done in history as a leadoff hitter, I think we saw some of the effects of that last year. And I'm not saying, you know, running out to center field makes it so hard.
Sure.
No, it's just playing outfield at Coors Field at altitude. It takes a ton out of you.
There's acres out there.
Yeah, it takes a ton out of you. We called it track practice half the time. You're going out to do track practice. And I think moving Charlie to right field is going to give him an opportunity not to rest his legs, just not to have to be as active.
Yeah, just to conserve.
And when we think about Charlie, I think about the guy who stole 40 bags, right?
Yeah.
We didn't get to see that as much last year. And hopefully, moving him over, he'll have a little bit more of that opportunity to steal more bases. I think that's something this team has that's kind of a lost art. They've got five guys that could steal 20 bags. Three guys that could steal 30 and two that could steal 40.
That changes the game.
It really does change the game, especially at altitude, because you've already got pressure on the defense. And when you've got guys that are going to run all the way up and down the lineup, I mean, watch out, because now you got a catcher who's on edge, a pitcher who's worried about guy on base being quick to the plate. And guess what happens when you do that? You make mistakes out over the heart of the plate, and you got guys like Trevor Story and Nolan that can just absolutely punish you.
And I think that's the one thing that went underrated on the 07 team, and you know better than anybody. The defense that team had
at the time,
and what these transitions are making right now for this new team, it's interesting to see certainly somebody, you know, being brought in with Murph. And making the transition with Dahl and Desmond, in center, that whole 07 team was so good defensively up the middle. And you know, what these, you know, I think that's obviously not making a ton of moves in the offseason, but, you know, these moves that get made internally on the field sometimes are underrated and sometimes can make a bigger difference than people realize.
I think, talking from the 07 team and that group of guys, preparation and communication were key. I mean, that was really what made the difference on defense. Obviously, you had Tulo up the middle, which, tip of the cap, that kid was, back then, I've never seen anything like it. Garrett at third base, no offense, Garrett, but let's be honest, you're like the seventh best third baseman in Rockies history defensively.
He didn't have to move a whole lot.
Tulo covered third base. Right, that was the idea. Right, they joked about that.
Right.
We also joked because Jamie Carroll in 07 was Garrett's caddy. He would come in and play defense the last two innings for Garrett. So we made sure that Garrett tipped his caddy 10% at the end of the season. But
Matt Kuchar.
Let's hold off on the golf.
We'll hold up on the golf.
I think for Desi, Dahl, and whether it's Hampson at second base or, you know, Ryan McMahon at second base and Trevor, they just need to communicate and understand that there is some essence of team defense in baseball. It's not just me covering my position. It's the angles and how I'm going to take it to help everyone.
All right, Sully, I'm jumping in here.
Okay.
60 seconds with Sparky, my friend.
Okay. You made me nervous about this. You said I'm not getting
don't
away
be
from
nervous.
It, which means...
Don't be nervous.
Are you going to be gentle?
Oh, nothing but. Now, these are rapid-fire questions. I'm looking for
Do I get one-word answers?
No. I want the truth, but I just want
you
quick.
You can't handle the truth.
You're probably right. My friend, highlight of your career, what was it?
My first major league at bat.
Who was your most annoying teammate?
Most annoying teammate, Spilly.
Now, Clint, your manager, out of 10, what would you rate him?
A 10.
Really? One being the highest? That's really. That's
wow, savage. that's going to make national news.
Yeah, again, I think we know why it didn't work out.
No, I mean, he was an unbelievable communicator. He understood what it was like to be in a player's shoes.
Yep.
And he also wasn't afraid to blow you up when you need to be blown up.
When you needed a spanking.
And that's okay.
We called
it getting called into the principal's office. But hey, in hindsight, sometimes you need that.
Fantastic. Best walk-up song you ever heard?
It's either Careless Whisper.
Ooh.
Who was that? I need to know.
And then hold on. Careless Whisper is Josh Reddick, if I remember.
Reddick.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then I think Adam Dunn. He was the first to do, when he was with the Nationals, why can't I think of the name of the song? Tony Walters did it last year. Oh, I'm losing my mind.
I love the Careless Whisperer.
I think Charlie Blackman's is up there, though, because
very few
people can get 50,000 people involved every single at-bat.
And first at-bat.
Yeah.
It sets the tone. Last question.
Yes.
There's some interesting records that you have. Now, we'll talk about those after the break. The one that I'm interested in, Jamie, do you remember when we were in Scottsdale a couple of weeks ago?
Oh, God.
And we had the pleasure of being at Rocky's Fantasy Camp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have an impressive win-loss record, except when it comes to the big game as a manager.
You can just call me the Buffalo Bills, all right?
You're now 0-6?
0-6 in the championship game.
You know what?
Three out of the last 4 years.
Here's what I'll do. I'll look you in the eye. I'm in next year. And I'm the difference, mate. Give me a start.
You just said you don't know anything about baseball. This isn't cricket.
My friend,
I play to win.
My friend, I've seen what I'm against. I've seen what I'm up against.
I play to win. I've seen what I'm up against. I'll be honest
with you. And let me tell you, the outfield ain't getting a lot of action.
You'll be on the bench.
That was hard to watch.
Hey,
it was hard to watch at
savage.
Times.
Savage.
Hey, listen, there was a lot of people talking, and when I mean a lot of people, there were 14 of us at that fantasy.
Oh, but riled up.
No.
Oh, the passion. Excitement.
I will say this.
I will just let me
speak.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jamie.
I was just going to say, there was a lot of talk about your pitching change.
Oh, yeah.
When you made that change. Should have been earlier.
Well, here's
the thing, though. My pitching change was right on time because when Tara came in, what happened?
Shut everybody down.
But hold on.
I can tell you what happened.
The game was tied. But the game was tied. She got a ground ball back to herself, went home for the double play, and I will not mention the gentleman's name, catching. The bases were loaded in this situation. Before this pitch happened, we said home to first for the double play, out of the game, because Wally was running to first base, slowest runner in fantasy camp.
Wally. Yeah.
And he tried to throw it to third base. Mm. And the next thing we knew,
we heard it.
the carousel started.
They should have done more video work. Sounds like a management issue. Should have been more video work on Wally.
I get them to the championship game, but all I can do is take the horse to water, right?
All right. We'll talk about it more during the break. We'll be right back after this. Let me make one thing clear. I don't need to ride yours. I got my... She keeps them always shined on. In a pretty cabinet, every cake, she says, just like Marie Antoinette, a building a remedy.
Clint Goodchild, Will Evan, Fan Thoughts, Friday 6 to 8, presented by Breckenridge Brewery. Caviar, cigarettes, well-versed in etiquette, extraordinarily
nice. She's a killer queen, gunpowder, gelatine. I love this.
Who sings this?
Was it Led Zeppelin?
different.
Different. Right, right. I'll have to do some research. We were talking about, like, you know, great songs, and it's always interesting. Do you want to complete? I felt like you need to get something out.
Well, no. First, it was Tony Walters came to it. It was his walk-up song last year. It was In the Air Tonight, Phil Collins. I couldn't Fantastic. Remember that. That was one of the best. I love when people change it up. Don't always go for, like, the obvious ones. I like that.
And that song got a second life after The Hangover, too. Like, who doesn't love that
question.
Scene?
Yeah,
like,
no question.
Mike Tyson, the whole bit. It's fantastic. Now, Sully, Unique Records.
Yes, sir.
All right, we've given you a hard time about Fantasy Camp record.
By the way, that Fantasy Camp, I mean, it's pretty cool, is it not?
I love it.
The Rockies do an incredible job with that.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
You will be my first round pick, but I'm going to tell you this. There's some pressure that comes with that.
Not for me.
Clearly, we go to the championship.
What do I
You're saying
lose?
You're going to be the game changer.
I am.
Then you're going to change the game. You better win.
I don't know how else to say it, mate.
You might be the first guy who gets sent home from Fantasy Camp.
Well, there's always a first, mate.
You know what the red tag in your locker means?
I do. I saw Major League. I just need to buy a bucket of chicken and buy a bucket of chicken and get some hats for bats.
Yeah. The fact that I'm going to get Spilly on the line after because fantastic. I'm playing against you two because I like the record that, you know,
first
or
of all,
lack thereof. That
Spilly
been,
notoriously has been bad at Fantasy Camp, and he won. He beat
he,
it. He beat
won,
us.
You know, I saw him win.
He poured champagne, and that makes me, my body rejects it.
We were there. We were there.
I felt it too. And you know what makes a great coach? Great players.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have to say, mate. Round one.
I felt like you had great players this year, though. So
I do every year.
I tell you, the best man on the field was a woman, and she was the best player.
Yeah.
She played for Team USA Baseball. She's incredible.
Mm-hmm. I looked her
She's
up.
Incredible, yeah.
Yeah.
I looked her up. Yeah. That was impressive.
What, how many innings pitched?
That game, she had four.
Yeah.
But the whole, she had two complete games.
I was gonna say,
she'd only given up one run.
But at the plate as well.
Yeah.
At the plate in the field, anyway.
Left-handed. She can,
oh, incredible.
Yeah.
The other unique records that you have, Sully, talk me through them.
Well, there's the one that I hang my hat on, mm-hmm. which is the two triples in an inning that I did against San Diego. That weird thing to have happen because I didn't even realize they were in the same inning. That's how long that inning was.
Wow.
And I didn't know it was a record.
I think, this is going to be
PV was one. He
PV
was the first
was
one.
I don't remember the other one.
Chan Ho Park.
My guess is you do.
Chan Ho Park.
Okay.
That's who all that
right.
was.
All right.
It was first guy to do it since 1955. Nobody's done it in the modern
era. Day. Yeah.
I know this. It will never get broken. It may get tied. I don't think anybody's ever going to get three in it.
That's a good
that would
point.
Be a stretch.
What other record?
This is Fight Club. Do you know what the eighth? The first. Seven
enough.
Rules
Fair
of Fight Club. This
enough.
Is not the eighth rule.
But you're right, though. Three triples in an inning.
We do not talk about Fight Club.
Three triples in an inning would be tough to, tough to beat.
No, the other record is, it's not really dubious because I would like to.
College word.
Own it.
I would like to say that I got the job done seven
out,
times
mate.
In a row. Seven
this
sacrifice bunts.
You're on
the seven consecutive at-bats.
Seven sacrifice bunts in seven consecutive at-bats.
That's
do
impossible.
You feel better?
Do I feel better?
Said that? Do you feel better?
No, like, I kind of regret telling you gentlemen about an hour and a half ago.
No, but it's walk us through.
We were in Washington at old RFK Stadium.
No, but in the batter's box, you got 1 foot in, 1 foot out. You look down, third base coach gives you the signal. And
I mean,
you've got to be like,
hold on,
are you?
Remember something. Todd Helton's hitting behind me. So I understand.
I'm familiar with his work.
So I understand the role in this situation.
Sure. Seven
yes,
times?
After the. You realize the fourth one in the first game came in the eighth inning. And we were up by three runs, I think. To be honest with you, this is one of those times. This is 06. Mm. I think Clint Hurdle was trying to teach me a lesson. And, you know, make sure you get the job done. It's Jamie Carroll was leading off. He got on base every single time. I got the job done. I can remember, though, one of them. I think LeVon Hernandez was on the mound for Washington. And I laid the bunt down, and I got caught watching.
Oh, really?
I was
really?
Watching. And I beat it out at first base, barely.
Oh, wow.
And I remember coming into the dugout, and I remember Clint saying to me, you can't, that you got to hustle down. I was like, I was just making sure I got it down.
Mm-hmm.
And again, though, that's one of those lessons that you don't forget and you don't repeat.
That's incredible.
Brian Schneider, who I became teammates with in New York, he was catching for the Nationals, and I can remember vividly him yelling at the Rockies dugout, let him swing the bat. Let him swing the bat.
That's fantastic.
Wow. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So again, we're in the trust tree, right?
Yeah,
the trust doesn't get broadcast.
No one's listening. There's a unique thing, and you didn't tell me this. So I learned this from Jamie at Fantasy Camp. We were sitting there. One of my closest friends is an Aussie, and he married a girl from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who her favorite baseball team is?
From Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Uh-huh. Is it the Colorado Rockies?
Uh-uh.
Who is it?
Iron Pigs.
That doesn't surprise me at
the
all.
Iron Pigs. And I have heard rumors of these Iron Pigs for a decade.
Honestly, it sells out every night.
It's incredible, yeah, right?
I played with them in 2011 with the Phillies, and the fans there are incredible. They come out every night, and it's...
Well, just from a translation standpoint, you know...
I still don't know what an Iron Pig is,
though. Well, an Iron Pig, I was going to say, from an Aussie, you know...
I think it's the greatest name
pig.
Of all
it
time.
It doesn't sound like an iron pig, but iron pig is different than an iron pig.
I can tell you who's an iron pig in this room.
It's fine.
Pig-headed is the little...
But we want the t-shirts, right? That's kind of where...
She uses this cooler. She drinks from this, like, koozie, as you guys would call them. Like, you know...
What would you call them?
Apparently a cooler.
Yeah. Not a koozie, apparently.
Not a koozie. All right, we're coming back for our last segment of the night, guys. I'm excited. One more to go.
Goodchild, Will Evans, Fan Thoughts, Fridays 6 to 8, presented by Breckenridge Brewery.
Do you slide on all your nights like this?
Good evening, listeners. You're stuck with Jamie Mack, myself, and Corey Sullivan for another 10 to 15 minutes before we clock off and start our weekend.
Very exciting 10 to 15
minutes. It's going to be the best, there's no doubt. It was 3-2 Avalanche over Chicago, but I believe a goal was just scored. 10 minutes left in the third period, 3-3. Nuggets versus Mavericks. Currently, Nuggets are up at halftime, 52-51. Now, speaking of other sports, I think we've covered baseball pretty heavily tonight, and I liked it. I liked it.
Liar.
I did. That's like one, this is one of my favorite shows I've done. I do want to touch on Zion. All right, and we don't need to talk basketball. I'm more interested in talking college versus pro. You know, where is the scale? You know, where are you tipping the scales in favor of the college over the betterment of the athlete? Now, Sully, you're the one that came through college 4 years, came out with a degree and stepped into baseball, and we were talking about it prior to the show that you think baseball is probably one of the last where the balance is still correct.
Well, I think when you look at revenues for college baseball, there are certain...
Do you mean the hundreds of dollars?
Well, there's certain conferences that still can generate some revenue, but you know, the majority of college baseball teams, they're not drawing large crowds, they're not bringing in a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So you are, myself included, getting a Wake Forest education. I think I got the value out of that education, and
arguably. Well, go ahead.
Well, for myself, I think baseball is one of the few sports that still do that. But when you're looking at the majors, when you're looking at the major revenue bring,
basketball football.
And football, I mean, and with Zion, I mean, you run the risk of costing yourself. Because you're mandated that you have to go for a year. And to me, whether anybody goes and actually attends class, if you know you're going for a year and you're starting your career after that, really, what are you getting out of that education? You're not getting a lot out of it.
No.
And the risk is
you get hurt
exactly what
without
happened.
A contract.
And to me, in our country at 18, you're a man or a woman. And if you want to go professional, you know, let's look at Mikayla Shiffrin, right? A local here in Colorado.
Yep, sure. Yep.
If she wanted to do professional skiing versus going to college to do it, she runs that risk.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, she should have the right to make that choice and not have somebody tell her you have to go do something else.
So in the case of Zion, though, so you know, everybody's talking about it this week based on the fact that he got hurt, you know, probably not too bad. Doesn't look like it's too bad. But the fact that there's a little bit of, you know, a pause that people take when they look at the injury and think, okay, oh, okay, let's shut her down. Let's shut her down, and that's close enough, and let's shut her down, and let's get...
May I use the example of Ben Simmons? Simmons did 1 year in college, LSU, got taken number one in the draft. In the preseason competition in Vegas, he blows out his ankle, sits out his first season. If that had happened 6 months earlier while he was at LSU, is he the rookie of the year? Is he an all-star this year? What deviation of his career would that take? And who is it really benefiting? I think injuries are going to happen in sports. It's just a matter of when. And if you're putting yourself in a situation where you can play at a higher level and that injury comes before you get the opportunity to do so, to where you're really given a timeline, A, to invest in recovery correctly, and B, support to where you know it's ongoing. You know, like pro teams will invest in their athletes to get them right if they know that they've got 6 years of conversion on that investment. College doesn't. And I just think it's despicable. I really do. I think it's disgusting, but that's just me.
Well, if you look at somebody like that, non-contact injury, and we can talk about the shoe blowout that people are talking about, but the fact of the matter is the shoe blowout probably saved his right knee from an MCL. I'm not a doctor.
No way.
I'm a doctor's son. But the fact of the matter is...
Did you not stay at a Holiday Inn Express?
I did not. I did not. They're not a sponsor. But the fact, the fact is people are, you know, they see that happen. And whether you're Coach K or whether you're President Obama, watching and you see that happen, people automatically think, oh my gosh, that could have been the end. And, you know, I think Jay Williams talked about the fact that you can go from if you're an athlete to that caliber, that good an athlete that is never been seen at that level, arguably, and you see him get a injury like that, that, you know, of course you can go out and get a Lloyd's of London, you know, insurance policy for $10 million, but he's going to sign a $120 million contract. He's leaving that kind of money on, absolutely, you know, on the table. Well, these are all decisions. Decisions are made every day from a business standpoint or personal standpoint. He made the decision to go to Duke, and I think he seems like the kind of player that's going to play it out and not turn away from playing basketball. I applaud that.
Yeah, I don't think it's a reflection on him. I think it just highlights the real question is, where's the balance? You know, if that goes worse than it did, and it's not just a warning shot across the bow,
mm-hmm,
is that just?
Well, I think one of the things we're leaving out, and we were talking about it before we came over, is people were paying $2,500 for a ticket to that game, none of which he was going to see, right?
And you can't put your name on a T-shirt
something. It's ridiculous.
Well, is it ridiculous?
Yeah, it is, because the value of a degree isn't increasing. It's decreasing in the job market. Now, I think if you look
talking about the education he's getting from his coach.
Sure. But could he be getting a similar education and getting paid?
Well, and I think the NBA reducing the age limit from 19 to 18 is a step in that direction. And I think that there's enough people out there that think that, you know, going from high school into directly into the pros, I mean, why shouldn't you be able to do that?
Well, and it leads in really well, and we were going to talk about, you know, the correlation between the two best players playing Nuggets versus Mavericks tonight and the European connection that's there. Are you better off going to Europe?
Because you can.
You can. You know, you're better off going over there, making a couple of bucks, getting an education at a pro level, and then coming straight into the NBA.
It's such an individual decision, not just based on the player itself, but every player. There's a long list of people that we've never heard of that made the wrong decision.
Oh, for sure.
And I think you know, the fact that this the lens is so focused on Zion right now, because he's such an unbelievable specimen, And you haven't seen anything like it since Bo Jackson.
And it's funny you bring that up too, because, you know, you look at a guy whose career was cut short by a freak injury.
Right. Carrying a linebacker.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no one even, like, he got up, he walked off, and we're like, oh, he'll be back. Mm-hmm. He's a stinger. No. He's done.
How many years do you have to play in college, Sully, to be a Major League Baseball player?
How many years do you have to play in college?
Yeah.
Well, once you enter college, well, you have to be there for three if it's a 4-year school.
So think about that.
Yeah. If you go to Division I, or if you go to a junior college, you can go every year.
And we talked about this, you know, earlier offline, in that years ago, if you played Major League Baseball and you played college baseball and or NHL hockey and you played college hockey, I mean, very rare. I mean, certainly in hockey, there weren't a ton of players in the NHL in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s that played college hockey. They went through the juniors, and that's how they got to the NHL. And I think that it's similar with baseball, but to your point, once you enter a 4-year institution, forcing someone to play 3 years, that just seems crazy.
It does.
Well, especially given the, you want your Wake Forest word, because you've made fun of me twice for it.
Go ahead.
Given the zeitgeist. I know you went to Michigan State. That means spirit of the times.
The Big Ten education.
With baseball. And how free agency is driving players to be younger. Maybe a rule change for that would be, you know, you go to a 4-year school in baseball, you can enter the draft every year. You know, because you want players to be younger. And you want them to enter free agency.
Are you the greatest
younger.
Wake Forest player to come out of?
No, not even close.
Can I just spit this out? I've been dying to talk about this. Tiger Woods' shot from the bunker.
Watch that. Yeah.
Just look it up. Today. Tiger Woods.
Listeners,
always a pleasure to be spending our Friday nights with you. Sully, thanks so much for
coming
in.
Thank you for having
tonight,
me, guys.
Mate.
It was
really
a pleasure.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Jamie, be careful out there, everybody. We hustle for change. Revolution ain't a game. It's another name. But life.